these are black. The black is the actual congressional control points where the funding is at there. The blue is the way that the Office of Management and Budget splits up the funds within it. So this risk operation account here is just a summation of all of the accounts up here. But whenever we talk about those different areas, we also always need to break it out between those different areas. You see nuclear materials useful and so forth. Again, just to point out, bottom line, 1282 is the request versus 1255, which is that 2.6% increase. And compared to what you're talking about in the actual 14 requests, we came out pretty good in that the appropriations is $46 million more than the president's budget request for 14. 13, you see that was actually about $100 million less than the request, and that was because of sequestration. So what we're seeing as a result of the Budget Act, that the funding's actually been going up these 2 years, which we hope to see that in 15 as well. Just looking across, you see for nuclear materials, 14 to 15 pretty much consistent. You see solid waste has reduction. if you look at this column and you say, well, this the enacted column in 13.
Doug, can you? Yeah. My eyes are too old to read the column headings.
Okay.
Much less the numbers.
Let me go back then. Yeah. Okay, up here we have, this is the fiscal year 13 enacted. So this is what we received from Congress. This here column is fiscal year 13, and then what we had to do was reprogram money into the right buckets, because when we got it over here, it did not allow us to do the scope that we needed. This here, third column, is President's budget request for 14, and then this column is the actual omnibus appropriations that we received. And then the last column is the 15 request. So,
15 request on the right.
Request here on the right. Okay. So you can see for the last 2 years, for 14 and what we're requesting in 15, fairly consistent in the risk management operations area. For the liquid waste program, which is right here, I mentioned that the salt zone disposal unit is now a separate line item. It's fenced off. So when you see this number of $37 million for that line item, if you want to compare it to the previous years, you have to add those two together. So that number that you see comes up to $588 million as opposed to this year, $566. So it's an increase, slight increase in the liquid waste program, the request is. The salt waste processing facility, that number is consistent with what has been in the our latest contract mod, which will allow us to complete construction of the facility by December 2016. And then to do startup and commissioning, so it's operating by 2018. And then down community regulatory support, that's things such as payment in lieu of taxes to the communities, and then also things to pay for some support to DHEC and EPA in order to support the site programs. Then the last thing is our safeguards and security, which is just to maintain the site boundaries, property protection, and but most specifically for the special nuclear material protection. You see an increase of $11 million, and one of the uses of that increase would be to upgrade our entry control systems, alarms, and so forth associated with that special nuclear material. So that's the quick overview of the 15 budget request. I don't have anything else. The next slide is just ask questions, so I'll just leave it here and just open it up if you have any questions.
There was a rainwater issue, I think, in one of the saltstone facilities, and just wondering about the status of that. In other words, some leakage or something. Last time there was an issue, I was wondering, just treating that, what's the status?
So we have an intrusion issue in one of the older vaults referred to as Vault 4.
It's a design we're not using any longer, and we're not using that vault any longer. So we have a series of projects to put a clean cap of grout on top of it, and actually a engineered purpose-designed roof over it to stop any further intrusion. And that's actually working this year, and we'll finish up next year.
Okay, and so that's not, we're particularly looking at in terms of budgets.
That's under the radioactive liquid waste. We don't break down all the scope that's under there. That's just part of the operating funds for that.
Okay, all right. So that's where that is, and
it's covered.
It's part of 14 and 15.
Yes, it'll finish up in early 15, actually.
Okay, I was just curious as to, I know the money had to go be somewhere, and I just was curious as to where it was. Thank you.
And actually, Vince, we were going to have that presentation today, but we pushed it back till July so that we could talk about MOX or hear about MOX.
Okay.
All right. I have a question for you. If I'm seeing that right, y'all pay $11 million in lieu of taxes, right?
Yeah, the actual amount that of that $11 million that's payment in lieu of taxes is between $8.5 million.
Okay, and I just heard from Steve that VC Summer pays like twice that. So how do you calculate, how do you work out that tax payment or tax in lieu of tax payment, right, with the?
Every year we have three counties, Barnwell, Allendale, and Aiken, that the site is. So the payment in lieu of taxes are pretty much based upon how much of the site is in each of the counties. So each year the county administrator, county manager, and our legal department sit down, and they just basically negotiate what that amount is. So it's normally increases some small percent each year is what it normally
is. But it sounds like you don't consider facilities, that it's more land.
You mean that such as if there were additional facilities based on, no.
It's just
whatever the negotiation
is. Just an area of land, okay. No wonder they don't like. Other questions?
Doug, is that payment in lieu, is that established by federal law?
That one I'll have to go back and find the answer.
Thank you.
Okay, our final presentation for the day is a presentation on that Canadian highly enriched uranium that was scheduled to come here for treatment. I asked for this presentation because a member of the public asked for it, but I'm glad we're having it. And Alan has agreed to answer questions. If the public has questions, he has agreed to answer those questions during the public comment period.
Thank you. Excuse me. My name is Alan Gunner. I'm the Senior Technical Advisor for the Nuclear Material Stabilization Project. Okay. I'll kind of give you some history as much on the whole spent fuel return program as far as background on this material, what the scope we're talking about, and then some conclusions. If you go way back to the beginning in the early 1950s, as part of the Adams for Peace, the U.S. provided enriched uranium and target material to various countries to support research and development with an intention of bringing the enriched uranium back into the U.S. when the country was finished with the material. In 1996, the department issued a final environmental impact statement and a record of decision formalizing our policy on bringing back the return of foreign research reactor fuel and target material. Then you follow up in 2000, the Savannah River issued a site EIS and records of decision looking at the alternatives for the storage of the spent nuclear material and the target materials when they were returned. If you go back to 2000, SRS EIS did include this Canadian material. It was listed as the target material. And go up to March of 2012 at the Nuclear Security Summit. This is where the United States and the Canadian government reached an agreement to return the U.S. origin HEU that was stored in Canada. September of 2012, the department signed a contract with the Atomic Energy Limited of Canada. It depended on the completion of NEPA, which we have and you'll see, to return the liquids. And then in March of 2013, actually March 29, 2013, the department issued a supplemental analysis and amended record of decision to receive, purify, and downblend this HEU material. Part of that record of decision also included the processing of used nuclear fuel that was stored at the Savannah River. The amended record of decision states that there would be 1,000 bundles of used nuclear fuel and 200 cores of HIFER fuel from the HIFER facility up in Oak Ridge that would be processed, downblended, and that material would be shipped off-site. Kind of a background on this material in itself. Highly enriched uranium is very slightly irradiated, and I'm talking about less than 2 weeks, to produce moly 99 that decays down to the technetium 99. The technetium 99 is the isotope that's used in many of the medical industries, from cardiology, oncology, and other medical screening techniques. AECL irradiates the highly enriched uranium targets, recovers the moly 99/tech 99, and the resulting solution that's containing the remaining HEU and fissure products have been stored at AECL facility. This is the material that we're talking about bringing here. Approximately 90%+ of the moly tech recovered by AECL is imported into the U.S. to support our medical industry. One more. Material the department is planning to bring to Savannah River from AECL is a resulting solution from processing the targets. It contains both the HEU and its fission products. It's a small quantity, approximately 6,000 gallons of solution, plus their flush solution that's coming in. We'll receive the solution, process it in H Canyon, purify the HEU, separating the fission products, discard the fission products to our liquid waste system. Then the purified HEU solution will be downblended and shipped to the Tennessee Valley Authority for fabrication into the reactor fuel. This HEU will be basically blended in with the HEU coming in from processing the spent nuclear fuel. How will it get here? We are going to be transporting it in a spent fuel cask from NAC International. It's what we call the LWT, legal weight transport cask. It's used to transport spent fuel around the world. Much of the foreign research reactor fuel we receive comes in the LWTs. NAC has submitted a license application to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission for 4 small canister configuration and the HU liquid content in the LWT cask. An NRC license, certification of compliance, and a U.S. DOT validation is required to allow these shipments into the U.S. And it's planned that the IEA will apply seals to the containers in Canada, and DOE will return the seals either to AECL or to the IEA to ensure that the material that they ship is received at Savannah River. And these are a couple of the pictures, you know, of what it would look like. This is actually towards H Canyon, and then this is a picture of what the cask inside of what we call a the ISO container, and then you've got the impact limiters, and then the cask is attached to that. When we receive it, the Savannah River site will receive these shipments directly to H area. Normally our spent fuel, if you remember, goes into L area for storage. Since this is a solution, we receive them directly in H area. We're making minor mods to the facility that allow the offloading of this material in the canyon. And then the material will be offloaded out of the small tanks into the H Canyon itself, and I'll show you an animation of what that is in a second. The concept here is you'll take that ISO container we saw, you will pick it up with a crane, put it on here, and then you will use, it's very similar to one of the things that we use down at the ports. You'll transport it into the facility. It's kind of a low one. And then once it's there, we'll unload, take the cask out, unload the cask. Kind of the cask components that we're talking about, you can look here. This is the actual LWT cask we're talking about bringing in, with 4 16-gallon tanks inside of it. Originally, it was one large tank. However, after working with the NRC, the decision was made to go to the four small tanks. This prevents a criticality if you get caught in some of the winter weather coming in, like from Canada. This would eliminate the concern with the freezing and the uranium concentrate in the bottom. These are other components of the cask itself that you know will be taking off. This is actually a cask inside the ISO container, and that's the lid and all.
All
right. Can you give me an idea?
Okay.
Tell him that. Take these. One more. Basically, you'll bring the cask in, you'll take the top off. This is what we call kind of, well, this is kind of a lead pig that we will actually extract the small tanks into. We'll unload it vertically, horizontal out of the cask. It will then be turned vertically, and we'll actually suck the material, pump the material out with a vacuum pump, and transfer it to an existing tank within the canyon, count for the material, and then from there it will be down blended in with the other materials coming in from the spent fuel program. And this is kind of the idea of how you would unload the canister itself. That is the, what we call the lead pig. The cap gets taken off. We lower cap, connect the connectors. This will be mostly remote, although once the canister is inside of this shielding device, then you can get up, basically within proximity to it to do some of the operations, but that will be done remotely where we actually hook and pump out the solution. As far as processing, once it's offloaded and accountability measurements are made, the information will be made available to the IEA, which is tracking this material. Again, like I said, we'll combine this solution with the solution from processing enriched uranium used nuclear fuel. We'll purify it using the standard canyon process, what we call the HM process, H-modified process, very similar to the Purex process, except for we do not separate any plutonium. Utilizing this process, we actually fission products and plutonium, if there are any, stay together and go directly to the waste program. The purified HU solution will be blended down to less than 5% enrichment, and then we currently already have this included in a contract mod with Tennessee Valley Authority as far as how much material we send to them. We had just signed an amendment to send 40 metric tons of LEU to them. This is the LEU, the result from processing the material, the fuel, as well as this material. Schedule, SR's expectation is to begin shipments in 2015. There's somewhere between 50 and 60 shipments, two casks per shipment, and it will take place over several year period to get the material here again. It's because we're bringing in small quantities per cask, 16 gallons. A little over about 64 gallons per cask. Conclusion, the material we plan to receive is of U.S. origin. The HEU will be downblended, significantly reducing any proliferation threats that come from this material. Material will be safely shipped in a spent fuel cask certified by NRC. It is compatible with our current processing in H Canyon. It's to take place over several years. Provides a disposition option for the material and allows the reuse of the uranium. The other part is this does have an exit strategy from the state. It's not like it comes in and will be stored. It will come in, it will be processed, and then shipped out of the state. And the amount of waste that would be generated from this is a fraction of a canister. Are there any questions?
It sounds like to me we're not bringing this in and storing it. We're going to, it's kind of a just-in-time, you'll bring 64 gallons in, run them through the canyon, No?
Correct. That is correct. We have four casks that we're going to allocate to this program. You'll have two, basically all four, and you know, two at Savannah River, two being loaded at, up at AECL, and it'll just be a continuous loop. No, there is no bringing it in and storing it. When it comes in, like I said, we'll offload it. We've got to perform the accountability measurements. We'll immediately include it in with the other enriched uranium that we're processing for the used nuclear fuel, and it'll go right on down. I mean, it's a just-in-time program.
So it's like a spigot. And so, because the last I heard were there were issues, both Canada and NRC have some certification of the transportation plan or something. If it's delayed, is that going to change your plan for processing it?
No. Right now, under the used nuclear fuel program, we'll be running through roughly 2020. So, you know, we would be able to accommodate, you know, some delay in this program. NRC issued to the Canadians some what they call requests for additional information. Actually, it's nuclear NAC International that's got the cask. So they sent what they call REIs in. NAC has developed responses, and it'll be resubmitting that SARP with those responses back to the NRC. Whether that will generate more questions, you know, you don't know, but they have attempted to answer NRC's questions concerning the shipments utilizing the LWT and the small canisters.
Are there any other sources of TC-99M?
I could not answer that. I just know that AECL is a large producer, you know, of what supports our medical industry. And like I said, over 90% of their Moly 99, Tech 99 does come to the United States to support, you know, our medical and, you know, medical programs here. I know the United States does not have a Moly. There's been some discussions about starting, you know, trying to get that started, you know, either, you know, in, you know, some of the DOE reactors, but right now the United States doesn't produce the Moly 99, Tech 99.
Other questions? Thank you, Alan. Thank you very much. All right, the last part of the agenda is public comments. The only person who signed up to make public comments is Tom Clements, so I'll let him go first. Then, if anybody. No, the other two are Travis. I got them. Yeah. So, I am Tom first.
Tom is allowing me to go first. I apologize. We didn't realize we needed to sign up. This chair is for tall people.
Yes, it is.
So I'll just
try the other one. See if it's better.
I'm sitting on. I'll be fine. In any case, good afternoon. I'm Joanne Day, and I'm co-president of the League of Women Voters of South Carolina. And on behalf of the League, I'd like to thank the members of the Governor's Nuclear Advisory Council for hearing our statement. The League has had concern about the legacy waste at the Savannah River site for almost four decades. We have recently updated our original 1997 research report on the status of nuclear waste in South Carolina, and that updated report is on our website, free to be downloaded. Clearly, Yucca Mountain and the Waste Isolation Pilot Project, WIP, can no longer be depended upon as a path forward for most, if not all, of the waste at SRS. There seems to be no movement within Congress regarding a permanent repository. We will therefore continue to be attentive to the Department of Energy's budget requests and congressional appropriations to manage the waste already at SRS. We appreciate the care that SRS technical staff has taken to manage these challenging wastes. We particularly appreciate the staff's tackling of transuranic wastes, identifying them, packaging them, and accomplishing shipments as the situation allowed. These wastes might well have been ignored, but staff was willing to take on a risky responsibility. The initial budget request to Congress for waste cleanup at SRS is of great concern to us. In addition, the Department of Energy has been reluctant to officially respond to questions regarding international imports at SRS's Citizen Advisory Board meetings. It may be in the state's interest to request a programmatic environmental impact statement regarding these international shipments. If the Department of Energy plan is to move away from the cleanup focus and move toward an international goal, the League believes that the citizens of South Carolina deserve to be informed. Thank you for the opportunity to share our concerns with you today.
Thank you, ma'am.
Good afternoon. Thanks for this opportunity to say a few words. I'm Tom Clements, and I'm the director of an organization that was officially announced last week, Savannah Riverside Watch. Savannah Riverside Watch is a 501c3 nonprofit entity that's a project of Fair Winds Energy Education, which is based in the state of Vermont. But I will, through my work with the organization, primarily be focused on Savannah Riverside, but also other nuclear issues in the state as well. I've provided you with a statement, and I'm not going to read all this, but I would call your attention to there's an email that actually was turned into a letter, and there are a lot more signers that were on this requesting of the Department of Energy that an environmental impact statement, essentially a supplemental environmental impact statement, be done on the import of the liquid high-level waste from Canada. DOE prepared a supplemental analysis and did not prepare the supplemental EIS. And the one reason that I think it's quite important that this still be done is, as I say in my statement, that this should analyze disposition options in Canada. The material we're talking about, the 6,000 gallons or 20,000 liters, is in one single tank. It's material that's from 2004 and before. Since that time, Canada has been solidifying the target material and storing it on site, so I don't know if it's going to come up that material would potentially come here, but as I'm told by physicists, that liquid in the tank could be denatured with depleted uranium nitrate and essentially blend down the material on site. There may be a question of the volume in the tank to do that, but there, in my opinion, there are disposal options in Canada that should be analyzed in a supplemental EIS. So I don't think we're over with this issue. I think there's still opportunity for that EIS to be done. Also, in the third paragraph here, the DOE's Global Threat Reduction Initiative in February and March 2014 secretly imported plutonium from Belgium and Italy. And this included some plutonium owned by Canada, which was a result of spent fuel reprocessing, civilian plutonium, at reprocessing plants in Belgium and Italy that are now closed. That material at Savannah Riverside has now been orphaned at the site. It's not part of the program to dispose of weapons plutonium. And as far as I can determine, there's been no environmental review prepared about the import of that material. At the Nuclear Security Summit in The Hague on March 24th and 25th, it was announced the intention to import about 300 kilograms of mostly weapons-grade plutonium of U.S. and U.K. origin that has been in Japan for quite some time. And I've raised this issue with the Savannah Riverside Citizens Advisory Board and others. It also appears if that would come back to Savannah Riverside, it would be orphaned at the site. There needs to be an environmental impact statement on that alone, but given the plutonium being imported from these foreign sources, and I know Sweden is another country, it could be up to 60 kilos that have been brought in. It's hard to determine because NNSA has been silent on this. Given that and the possibility, I've showed you this before, the import of graphite spent fuel from Germany, and a statement that I gave you was read at a Fukushima rally right adjacent to the place where this material is stored. I would concur with what the League of Women Voters has called for. There needs to be a programmatic environmental impact statement on these unusual materials that are now being brought into the site because they do make waste management more difficult. And to show you this also, the top picture here is the Pacific Egret. This is what is used to transport these materials. It's Pacific Nuclear Transport Limited. It has weapons mounted on it because it does transport plutonium and highly enriched uranium. I can point those out if you want to look at it afterwards. There's also an aerial shot of the MOX plant here from March 20 if you want to take a closer look at that. And the German graphite fuel, which I showed you, I think, at the last meeting, which is being considered for import. And just a few words on the MOX project. As I put in the title here, it's a textbook case in DOE mismanagement and massive cost overruns.